It's time to step into the Coming Out Lounge, a cool, safe space to be true to your sexual self, with your host, Rick Clemens. Rick has helped hundreds of people come out of the closet, and now each week he's bringing you cool insights for loving and accepting yourself, boosting your self-confidence, and living a guilt-free, purpose-filled life on the other side of the closet doors. Cuddle up with yourself and get ready for heartwarming coming out stories, ideas for living authentically, and tips for being fully self-expressed. Now here's your host, Coming Out Coach Rick.
Hey, 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 closet dwellers and closet busters. It is time once again for the Coming Out Lounge. Yes, we are winding down the Coming Out Lounge. We're about to step into life uncloseted here in just a few weeks, but that doesn't mean anything's really changing. We're still going to have the same basis, the same great conversations, all that good stuff, but we're just changing up the name so we can have even more conversations about how people are living in closets and coming out of them to live their life uncloseted. And today's closet is kind of an interesting one. In all the episodes that we've done, and I know we're getting close to 200 right now, I don't know that we put a focus on this particular conversation. And it's an interesting walking the fence between loads of self-love and really doing what you need to do for yourself before you step to the other side of the fence, which is just this overt self-love, believing you are far removed, far above anybody else, and that anything you do is right and anything that you do is untouchable. And when somebody starts acting like this and they really dive deeply into that kind of ugly space of self-love, it's typically what we would call narcissistic. And I have been around some people. I was actually raised by someone who was rather narcissistic. And until I'd had the conversation with my guest, who's going to be on here in just a second, I didn't really realize the impact that had on my own coming out journey and my ability to be who I wanted to be. And I now realize, even today, as I've been thinking about this conversation, how many times, even in present day, I allowed the narcissistic voice to hold me back and put me back in interesting closets. And I thought it would be a really powerful conversation to talk about this, talk about how it impacts your journey. My friend Chris Hyde, who I met through a group of guys who have a very interesting social group online that I'm going to keep quiet about because I want him to be able to keep it anonymous. But we met through there as guys who have come out of the closet later in life and got to know him a little bit. And then we talked about doing each other's podcasts. And we've been talking about this for a while, and it's actually happening. Chris is a graduate from Cal Poly San Luis Obispo and the Talbot School of Theology, and he does some really great stuff. He's also a coach, but he's had some very, very interesting turns and changes and things throughout his life that I thought would be really interesting to have him talk about what it's like to never let a narcissist keep you in the closet. Welcome to the program, Chris Hyde. Hey, Chris, thanks for being here, man.
Thank you. Very good to be here.
Yeah, we've tried to get this done for a while now, and we're actually making it happen. So
finally, I'm glad.
Yeah, me too, because I love where you come from. I love some of the stuff that you've done. You were very involved in some evangelical stuff, as well as your own coming out journey. You've had some interesting exposures, which I'll let you talk about. I don't want to blow the cover on some of the interesting things you've got to do as you've worked your way out of the closet, past the narcissistic realm, and into your current life. So why don't we kind of just step back to, you know, where you first began to realize what it meant that you were in some narcissistic places with some very narcissistic people.
Well, it actually was something that got started. It took me until my 40s to realize what was going on. And after being in a very unhealthy marriage to my ex-wife and going back to counseling for the second time in my life, mm-hmm. I was talking to my counselor about some things that I had experienced growing up and things that I was experiencing in my marriage. And my counselor looked at me and said, "I think you have some mental illness in your family." And I said, "What?" And she said, "Yes, a personality disorder. I really think that you were raised in a narcissistic home." Mm-hmm. And I just sat back in my chair, and I think my eyes bugged out. And I, all of a sudden, it was like, you know, the scenes in the movies where everything goes in slow motion, and you start going, right. Whoa, oh my gosh. You know, the lights are coming on, and I realized, wow, I'm not the crazy one. And mm-hmm. I always thought that I was.
Well, and that's very typical, though, when you're around narcissists. It's like, it's about you being the crazy one. It's about you. It's not about them. I mean, it is about them, but it's not about them. They make it about everybody else.
Yes. And especially when you were raised in that sort of a home, the narcissist that is a parent a parent, as in your parents, kind of grooms the children to respond to the narcissism. And what I realized happened to me is that I was groomed really to have no self and to serve the narcissistic parent in my family. And for the narcissism, well, I'll talk about it as my dad, you know, basically to serve my dad and all of his whims and wishes and personality desires. Right. And he made me to be a person that wasn't allowed to have really any sense of self. And so I grew up with very little sense of self because of that.
So was it just you or was it everyone in your family?
You know, I have a brother who's a little bit younger than me and we are not close. And so I don't know, you know, what that's done with him, but I do, now that my dad is gone and I've talked to my mom about this a little bit, I do know that, you know, what she went through. And, you know, unfortunately, a lot of times when you are the spouse of a narcissist, you end up enabling that behavior quite a bit. And I think that that went on. And she was, you know, married in a time when wives didn't stand up for their husbands a whole lot. And especially when she was trained to respond in certain ways to his narcissism, you know, it just became part of the family system.
Well, and I think not only does it become part of the family system, but then it starts to become part of our quote unquote DNA. And then we start to attract other narcissists into our life because this is our norm. This is what life looks like. This is how we do this. And then suddenly you're surrounded by friendships that are that way. And then as in your case, you move forward and the next thing you attracted was, well, I'm not going to say the next thing, but you ended up in a relationship with a woman that was very much the same way too, right?
Yeah, well, and even before that, getting involved in evangelical Christianity, which, you know, having come out of that and having been in it for many years, there's a lot of narcissism in conservative Christianity and a lot of very strong personalityed conservative pastors that are living out their ego by being, you know, this strong religious leader that everybody looks up to and everybody thinks is perfect. And they feed on that. And I got pulled into that as well and really felt called to be a pastor. And I was walking into all of that. And I really think it's because I was lacking love so much in my home of origin. I was looking for that in the church. And then I just bought into that there's only one way. Sort of ideology. And that one way then can become very narcissistic.
I relate to that fully because being raised as a Seventh-day Adventist, there was definitely, and still is, I guess, I'm not a practicing Seventh-day Adventist at all anymore, but there was definitely that space of, oh, we're the one. And I don't think that's uncommon in most faiths, like, oh, we're the chosen ones. We're the ones, you know?
Yes.
So when it becomes that point where we are the one, you listen, you act, you do, you breathe, you did, you know, it suddenly, I know if some of my past faith bearing members could hear me right now, they'd probably like be like ready to kill me, but it suddenly becomes like you drank the Kool-Aid and this is what you're meant to believe. And through my own journey, and I know just a little bit, I know about your journey, you suddenly have that wake up moment where it's like, okay, wait, this doesn't feel right. There's something really, really, really wrong with this. And it's tough because I think in all religions, to some degree, there's probably a layer of narcissism that really we should all step back from and go, okay, what is this really all about? Is it about the people or is it about the belief or is it both? And what can we do to really see the truth in all of this?
Yes. Well, and, you know, I think for me, I'm getting kind of drawn into that conservative religion. Then when it came to my sexuality, and I got introduced to religion at the age of 19. And so I got pulled into this religion that there was only one way. And so that became a conflict with my sexuality. And I desperately wanted to be right because my family had told me that, you know, there's certain ways you got to live your life and there's a right way to do it. And so you got to be right. And so that just fit right in with the conservative ideals of religion. And so when I was told, hey, you know, God doesn't like people that are gay, I immediately decided, okay, then I'm going to do the right thing and I'm going to do whatever it takes to get out of being gay.
Yeah.
And that really led me into my journey into the whole ex-gay ministry and being involved with Exodus International, because I wanted to be the best ex-gay there was in the whole wide world. Mm-hmm. And then I could prove my worth, you know? Yeah. I didn't have the worth from my family, and so I needed to prove my worth, especially because I felt called to be a pastor. And so if I was going to be a pastor, I needed to be straight, I needed to have a wife, needed to have kids, all that stuff.
It's so interesting that you say, I know I got kind of quiet there for a minute, but it's been something I've been like exploring a lot in the last few months as my business is taking some shifts and twists and turns. As I said, you know, with the new podcast coming out, and we're making some shifts around this. I've been doing some deep dives into, okay, what is this all about? Is this about me trying to get some level of, you know, adulation and acceptance again? Or is this about truly trying to be of service? And it's been an interesting journey for me, because I've literally had to go back into those deep spaces where I used to be, okay, this would be, okay, if I can do this, then then I'll be accepted. Or this is what will make me feel loved and cared for. And what I came to was, no, this is just the next layer. This is the next layer of starting to really tell some bigger stories and some more stories about how we're all living in different closets and moving forward. But man, the narcissist was playing big time for the last few months, because there were moments that I'm like, yeah, if I do this, then I can get this great gig. And then I'm like, no, wait, come back to center. What is this truly all about? And even in the past few weeks, I've been at a couple of conferences where I made the intentional choices at these conferences to just literally, I know it's going to sound crazy, to just be there, to not be like, okay, how can I leverage this and do this? Yes, I talked about things, but it's like, let me just be here and absorb, you know, for the first time in a couple of years, let's just absorb rather than, okay, who can I really connect with? And, you know, and what I found was, it was so much easier. It was so much easier to just be and just to network and have good conversations all, because there wasn't like any intentions.
You know, I think when it flows out of you and from who you are, rather than you trying to be something, you know, that's the way it's supposed to be.
That's the big difference. So you got into the ministry, you started doing a lot of stuff, started feeling like, okay, I'm going to be, as you said, I loved when you said the best ex-gay there is.
Yes.
And so take a little bit further into that journey. I'm sure along the way you started really like seeing and being somebody that I don't know if you really even knew you didn't want to be at that time, except you just knew this was part of the path.
Yeah, you know, I just felt like this was what I was supposed to do because this is what God wanted. And so I did 2 years of reparative therapy in Exodus International. It was during that time that I met the woman that would be my wife. And we got married, and I kind of graduated, quote unquote, from reparative therapy.
So since you couldn't see it, Chris just did on video the little quote fingers, you know, as we all do.
Yes. So yeah, I graduated and I set off to be a pastor, and I was going to change the world. And you know, that's where my narcissism started to come in, because I felt like I had this calling and this mission that God wanted me to do. And you know, I know a lot of it is ego when you're, you know, in your 20s and 30s and you haven't fallen on your face enough.
Right.
And so I got out there, you know, expecting that, you know, I was going to conquer the world. And what I found is that as I got into marriage and into being a pastor, that it was a lot more difficult than I realized. And I continued to struggle with my sexuality. Mm-hmm. And I really, you know, even though I graduated from the program, I still was not a changed person.
Right.
And then I was married to a woman, and we unfortunately had a very unhappy marriage. And so I just kind of plugged along with that for many, many years, because I felt like that was what I was supposed to do and what God called me to do. I started to have kids. I had 3 children. And you know, you keep walking farther and farther into the forest, and it's a long way to turn to get out.
Mm-hmm.
And I got very deep into that forest. And what I also realized during that time was that I was really operating out of this sense of a small self, trying to make myself feel better because of what I didn't get growing up. And so everything was about, you know, me trying to fill that hole that I had really, you know, I should have been built up and my personhood formed as a child. You know, that's the best thing that parents can do for their kids, is to help them to realize who they are and build them up to know that they are loved, cared for, secure, all of that. So since I didn't have that, I was constantly trying to find that, and nothing really did it ever.
Mm-hmm. It's so interesting that you bring that up about the kids, because I know as a parent, and I haven't done the best. I mean, there's times that I'm not the best and I can hear the narcissism coming out, and I have to stop and go, this is fucking ridiculous. I can't believe I'm saying some of these things. In fact, in just the past couple of days, there's been a couple of things that I've noticed, and I'm like, not with the kids. Maybe it's because they're both gone right now. And I'm like, okay, so this is bugging me. And it's like, wait, why is that bugging you so much? That's not something that would normally bug you. And it was the little pebble in the shoe. It's that still those little shreds of what was that I grew up around. And, you know, I'm not knocking my dad per se. It's just, that's what he grew up with. And then that's what his dad grew up with. You know, it's a lot of this, and there's a lot of it around. And so what I'm trying to make sure I do, at least as I move forward, is really talk about those things with my daughters. It's like, okay, if you ever hear me being that way, I want you to call me out on it. Don't be afraid. You know, I may still bristle, but that's all dad can really do. Dad's only going to bristle, you know, and calm down, you know. So a couple of things that you just talked about, I think is really powerful stuff to, you know, kind of delve into just a little bit. So you go all through the ex-gay stuff, you come out, you graduate. But as I heard you speaking, and I just kind of stayed quiet on that, even as you tell the story, I could almost sense that the energy was there that it wasn't working. You knew it wasn't working kind of even as you went through it, but yet it sounds like you kind of just kept burying it under all these other layers of stuff and going, this is what I'm supposed to be, period.
Yeah, because, you know, I think a lot of times when you're raised in a narcissistic home and you have to kind of become a performer, which is what I became. I was the performer of the family. I was the good kid. I strove to have good grades, and I was going to prove to everybody that I was valuable by succeeding. And so that's what I did with the whole ex-gay program as well. I was, you know, bound and determined that I was going to succeed, because that was going to prove my worth. And so I did just keep my head down. And even though, you know, I struggled with pornography for so many years and just kept that, you know, as my dirty little secret, you know, that you don't, that a pastor would never let anybody know. And then, so you deal with it and you bury it, and then you go on, because you have to succeed. You have to be good. You have to look like a pastor, and pastors aren't allowed to have struggles and hurts and wounds and all of that. And so I just put my head down and kept going.
You know, that's so interesting, because oftentimes I get asked when I'm speaking to colleges and universities, it's like, okay, so you were sleeping with this woman, but simultaneously you were having sex with men. We don't get it. How did you do that? And it's just that thing of, it was like an out-of-body experience either direction I went. When I was with the men, it's like, okay, I was just getting my carnal urges met. There wasn't really anything there. Okay, maybe there was a few guys, and it's like, yeah, I wish this was like the real deal. But I could pivot in a moment and step away from it and like, okay, that's done. Didn't ever really happen. And then I could come home and be with my wife and be sexually intimate. And then, okay, that's done. That didn't really ever happen. And I don't think people, they have a really hard time grasping these things. Like you just said, you know, the pornography thing, but you know, hey, I'm the pastor. So here we are. Let's get up. Let's deliver the sermon. You know, let's keep these things behind the scenes, so to speak. And you just keep going, because you just have learned that this is how you're supposed to do. You're supposed to make everybody happy, and you're supposed to do these things in life, plain and simple.
Yeah. And, you know, there's so much about narcissism when you're raised in it, and when you're the one who is, in a sense, the victim of the narcissistic abuse, you have learned to make everybody else more important than yourself.
Yep.
And so that's what I did. You know, I learned that I needed to make my parents happy when I was growing up. And then I lived for my friends in college. And then I got married, and it was all about, you know, making my wife and kids happy, even though I failed at that, you know, a lot of the time. And as a pastor, it was make the congregation happy, you know. And I was on staff at a couple of mega churches. You know, so when there's 1,000 people on a Sunday morning that you got to make happy, you know, all of your energy goes to that, and then you have nothing for yourself. Mm-hmm. And so I found that there was no Chris. Chris was all about making everybody else happy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a little bit of a shell of Chris or Rick that's like very down there at the very bottom. And by the time you get to that bottom, it's not like a bowl of ice cream. Like, okay, I really want that last taste. It's not sweet. It's so worn out. It's so exhausted. And you don't really recognize it because you don't even know down there at the bottom of who you are, who you are. And I know that sounds kind of strange the way I just said it, but at the bottom of who you are, you can't find who you are because you've given it out to everybody else. And I know for me, Chris, and I'm curious for you, when I really started, and I'm still working at it, when I really started to like love myself and give myself the right kind of self-care, I noticed how much I didn't need to do for others to try to get attention. Yes. I did for others because I wanted to do for others. That was it. Not because I'm trying to get approval, not because I'm okay. Well, you know, and I still struggle with it. I mean, I'm not going to lie. It's one of those things that crops up every so often. And I still go, okay, this isn't about me being who I am. It's about the narcissist coming forward and going, wait, you're not getting enough attention here. So how similar does that sound to you, man?
Very. You know, I went back to counseling in my 40s and I ended up kind of undoing everything that I learned in reparative therapy. And that counseling led to me coming out to my wife, going through a divorce, all of that. I ended up meeting the man who is now my husband and us getting married. You know, that was a lot in all of that. But for sure, to answer your question, now kind of being on the other side of it, as my heart and my soul has been allowed to come out and blossom and be who I am, and I've received love for that. I mean, literally, I feel so loved and cared for.
Yep.
What has happened is I realized that I don't need to perform anymore. Mm-hmm. And it actually impacted my ministry as a pastor. Mm-hmm. Because I got to the point probably about a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, where I said, I don't need to be a pastor anymore. And it was in that moment that I realized, you know, I said that I was, you know, not in ministry for myself. Mm-hmm. But then I realized how much I was, mm-hmm. was to make myself feel valuable and good. And once I felt that intrinsically, I didn't need the external work in order to feed my soul.
You know, it's kind of ironic that here we're sitting here doing this podcast, and this medium was very instrumental in me moving through that space and starting to see the narcissist. Because when I started it, it was all about, oh, wow, I've got, and it was a radio show at first, you know, you and I have talked about that. So it was a radio show at first and it was like, oh, wow, I've got a radio show. And then the more I did it, I was like, okay, this is all about me. And then about, I would say probably about 10 shows into it, I was like, wait, I'm here to help people. This is not feeling like my coaching. This is, you know, so I started seeing, and all the stories were still good. I mean, but I saw myself starting to shift. And even in the last year, as I've had really great success by bringing some, you know, great, interesting celebrity type names to the show, what I realized is it doesn't matter if it's a celebrity or if it's common people that are coming on the show, or if it's somebody that nobody has probably never heard of. What it's all about is being of service and going, let's share this. In fact, the one that I just recorded just prior to you was about gay dads and gays with kids. And then the one prior to that was something completely different. It's about bringing all the different stories to life. And that's why I was so excited about this one, because I thought, you know what? This narcissistic piece is probably something a whole lot of us who are coming out of the closet are faced with, but we don't even realize that's what it is. We don't realize that's what's holding us in that closet. It's a powerful, unfortunately, it is a very powerful thing. And it is kind of a somewhat mental illness until you decide, okay, let's confront this and let's see what this really looks like for me, even if I'm simply just a victim of a narcissist. How does that then impact me?
Yes. And, you know, I think the way that it impacted me and the way that I've seen it impact a lot of people is that if they are, in a sense, victims of narcissistic abuse, they've been in relationships with people that have been narcissists, their sense of self is very low. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for me, when I think about my situation in that, I would have come out so much earlier if I had a stronger sense of self.
Yep.
But it was my lack of sense of self that kept me just doing what everybody else told me I needed to do so that I would make everybody else happy. And it took this building of my self-esteem and my sense of self that got me to the place where I said, I don't care what happens. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, I don't want to damage my family and everything, and I care about them, but I have to stand for me and what is true for me.
Yep.
And what is true of me. Yep. And I believe in myself and value myself enough to say that is the priority. Mm-hmm. And I remember when I was in counseling the second time, at one point it got so painful. And my counselor said, we can stop. I won't keep pushing you. And I said, no, I have to get healthy.
Yep.
And that was my, you know, my mantra, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And I was going to get healthy. And I'm so glad that I pushed through and developed the courage and developed the sense of self so that now, you know, I want to live in a way where I am living according to who I am no matter what. And if people don't like it, they can kiss off. You know?
Exactly. And I think this is where people have a really hard time sometimes with this is, okay, so we're talking a lot about self-love, but then we'll say something like, and then they can just kiss off. The bottom line is if somebody, my perspective, it sounds like you have the similar perspective. If somebody is causing me harm by me still trying to force me to be that person I'm not being, I'm doing myself more self-harm than by stepping forward and saying, this is who I am. And you can actually go kiss off. That's who you get to go choose to be. You can be that person who tries to force other people to be somebody they're not. I don't want to play into that game. It's a very hard transition to make that. It's one of the things that with my own daughters, I have worked and continue to work really hard on of finding that beautiful balance between, you know, being yourself and not being an ass about it.
Right.
There's
right.
A beautiful balance there. But what I find so often is in my work, and you as a coach too, I'm sure you see it too, but so many people come to the coming out work. And the thing is it's more about the wounding that's happened than the shame of who they are. I mean, there's not really, yes, they do show up kind of shameful of being gay. But when I say, okay, so let's just say, you know, nobody was telling you there was something shameful about that. Would you feel that way? Well, of course not. But it's all the wounding that's come along with it. And 9 times out of 10, those who are most wounded, I know from what I've talked to them about, there's a narcissistic person that they've been involved with, have been raised by, maybe 2 people, it depends. And that's where it really affects them. And I can see how they show up too, that sometimes they come with a real narcissistic attitude. I'm like, okay, well, you know, we're going to start somewhere that you're not even going to see where I'm going to go with you, because take you somewhere that you've got to kind of break that down before you can lovingly step forward and say, this is who I am. This is the person I'm meant to be. So,
yes. And you know, the thought that just came to mind through all of that, I was just thinking about, you know, you can stand for who you are, you know, back to what you were saying about your daughter and what you're trying to teach her without being an ass. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think the pendulum can swing, get a little healthy, then you may come off as an ass a little bit because you're wanting to stand strong, you know, so much when you haven't before. And I think for me, it got to the place where I decided I don't want to be placed in a box anymore. Yes. I was in a box in my home of origin. I was in a certain kind of box in evangelical Christianity. I was in a box in my marriage. And then when I moved into progressive Christianity, I was in a box there as well. And now, as I'm in a new phase in my life, I'm trying to say no to the boxes. Mm-hmm. I just want to be.
Yes.
And for the first time in my life, you know, now at 51 years old, saying no more boxes.
Yeah. Isn't that amazing?
And it feels great.
It does feel great. And, you know, it's boxes, closets, whatever you want to call them. One of my friends, she and I did some branding work, and she goes, well, it's like a drawer. You got all these drawers that you put stuff in. I'm like, whatever the metaphor is, it works. You know, is it whether it's a box, a closet, whatever it may be, it doesn't work because the thing that I believe we were brought to this planet to do more than anything is just be the person we're meant to be, however that looks, you know. And when you can grasp that, then that's when you can really move forward and you can be fully yourself. And you can learn to do a couple of things. You can recognize a narcissist And you can start to learn to stand up to a narcissist and say, well, this is who I am. You get to choose to be that person. I choose not to be that person. And I choose not to let you make me be somebody I'm not, plain and simple.
Yeah, and there's a lot of things that you have to learn, and there's a lot of recovery from narcissism. And, you know, that's part of what I do in my coaching. And you have to learn appropriate boundaries, and sometimes you have to have no contact with the people that have wounded you and things like that so that you can grow to be who you need to be. It's a big, long process.
It is.
And a lot of layers.
Yes, there are, and I would invite people to not be afraid to go into the layers. Is it a journey? Absolutely. Is it worth it? Yeah. Because I, as I said, and as you've shared too, Chris, when you can start to see the stuff in yourself and you can catch it and you can stop yourself, that's when you know you are definitely growing. In fact, a couple of shows ago, one of my friends, Mike Ganino, he and I were talking in somewhat similar terms about, you know, the concept of yes and. There can be the yes but, or there can be the yes and. And to me, a narcissist is always going to say yes but. Someone who's not a narcissist is always going to go, yes, and. You're going to step into the arena with someone, you're going to understand them, you're going to acknowledge and validate where they are, and you're going to go into the story of, okay, well, help me understand you. You know, yes, but is, yes, I hear you, but you're wrong. And this is the way it is. And this is how you should be with me. And this is what you, you know, you can, it's one of the simplest formulas, I think, for really seeing the narcissist and walking through it. So,
yes, absolutely.
So, as we're winding up here, I know it goes really quick, but if you could leave some bit of just encouragement or advice for someone who may be really struggling either with their own levels of narcissistic abuse or maybe their own narcissism or somebody who really just is ready to say no more, what would be one last piece of advice you'd love to leave them with here, Chris?
You know, I would say that if you have been in relationships where you start to wonder if you are going crazy, and if, you know, if these other people are telling you that you're wrong and you're thinking, no, I'm not, but my world's not making sense because of that, the narcissism is really the crazy. And if you start to realize that you're in this relationship that is just crazy making, that is the time to reach out and get some help from a coach or a counselor who can help you to realize that what has maybe been your normal really isn't normal.
Yeah, absolutely.
And do the work to investigate what normal really is.
And define what your normal really is. I mean, a lot of things that I think that happens to those of us who've been in narcissistic relationships of any kind is we've lost our normal. And I think that's kind of the gist of everything we've been saying is you got to find yourself and you got to find your normal because it's there. But we have been layered upon layer of stuff. We don't even know what that normal looks like. Oftentimes that's a true sign you are in a narcissistic abusive relationship. So,
and learning to find your voice.
Absolutely. Find that voice. It's so important. So speaking of finding a voice, if somebody wanted to find your voice and connect up with you, Chris, what's the best way? I know we've got your Twitter account. We've got a website here, but do a little shout out for your work that you're doing.
Yeah, I would say you can check out my website, which is www.theprogressivesoul.com. Awesome. And there you can learn a little bit about some of my appearances on television and things and my work as a coach. And I'm also going to be doing some writing coming up and beginning a book. And so that'll all be there on my website.
So when you get that book done, we will definitely have you back. We'll have you back under the new brand of Life Uncloseted. I think it'd be fascinating to go at this again and come from that angle. I'm so excited you were here, man, today. And we finally got to do it. We made it happen. Yes, it does take time to make things happen, folks. I really appreciate you, brother, and having you show up and share yourself in the way that you did today.
Yeah, thanks so much. Great to be here.
So that's what we call in the podcast world a wrap, the end, finito, whatever you want to call it. That's the end of another episode of the Coming Out Lounge. I'm Rick Clemens, the Coming Out Coach, that guy that hopefully is helping you simplify your life so you can make some big, bold moves. And if you've been wanting to do just that, might I suggest that you hop over to the comingoutlounge.com website. On the homepage or on the episode pages, you're going to see a little icon that says schedule a discovery session. And I would love to have a chat with you. If you're kind of in that space of trying to figure out what's next, how you're going to do this, let's have a chat, you and me.
We'll sit down for 30 minutes. We'll do it over the phone, via Zoom, via Skype, whatever works. And we'll have a chat about where you are in your journey. It's totally free, no obligation, but I'd love to just help you in any way that I can. It's kind of my give back to my listeners of the Coming Out Lounge. And as usual, I just want to say I love you. I appreciate you. I'm so glad that you're subscribers. And keep sharing this podcast. The more we share this, the better the world will be and the less homophobia and bigotry that will exist out there in the world with each step that we make. Finally, never, ever forget that if you want to give us a suggestion for a show or a guest or have a comment or have a question, call us at 949-371-8559. Again, 949-371-8559, and we'll listen to what you got to say. And with that, we're going to wrap it up. Have a great week, everyone. Take care.